is he, my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is the Shame-Free Zone, and I'm Veronica Monet, your host. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I have Robert Silver with me here tonight. He's calling all the way from Hawaii, and he's going to be talking to us about conscious sensuality. He's actually studied and taught with the Network for New Culture. I actually did a workshop for them a couple years ago up in Oregon. One Taste, I used to teach there almost every month for a year in the San Francisco place. Love it. Essential Evolution. He's actually the co-founder of that. I have to confess, I haven't taught a workshop there. We're going to have to do something about that. And he's worked with many sacred sexuality and tantra teachers. He practices a type of yoga I've never heard of, so I think he's going to tell us a little bit about that. He's a licensed massage therapist, and he loves to give massage incorporating the elements of Lomi Lomi, Thai massage, cranial sacral, pelvic release techniques. I have to say, I've had almost every single one of those. And he also provides conscious sensuality coaching over the telephone and email as well as in person. Robert, thank you so much for staying up. Is it early or late in Hawaii?
It's actually earlier.
Earlier, okay. So what are you, like 8 o'clock?
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, 2 hours early. And are you on the Big Island or Maui?
I'm on the east side of the Big Island, in the jungle. Very beautiful and very close to the beach.
The east side. Wait a second. The west side, the west side is dry. The east side gets all the rain.
Yeah.
So you're...
We get a little bit of rain, although we're in a dry spot here. It really is paradise here. I'm super grateful to be here.
It's my favorite island. It's where I went for my... honeymoon, actually, years and years ago. My husband and I went there for our honeymoon. And I love it. I think you have like 11 climates out of a possible 16.
There's a lot of different zones here. It's a very powerful spot. We're about 5 miles. My home here is about 5 miles from where the lava flung into the ocean. And it's unbelievable for... transformative work because we're just so close to nature and nature is so powerful here.
It's a special island to me because Oahu is just, it's like Santa Clara to me, and Maui is very much like Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz is nice, but it's still very, you know, like the rest of the United States, kind of.
Civilized. Yeah.
What I like about the Big Island is the aloha spirit is still very much alive and well there. That's been my experience.
Yeah, it's very sweet, and I'm super grateful to be here. And
now, how long have you lived there?
I've been here for 6 years.
And are you getting island fever yet?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I really love it here, and at the same time, the last year or so, I've been traveling more and more because I'm very excited to share. All that I've harvested from living here, and a lot of what I've harvested, my background was originally in doing environmental and political work, and then having lived in Hawaii for these number of years, I've been very focused on the skills that we need for better relationships and living more closely with more people. I've been doing a lot of community living, starting communities, and so that's really the basis of my work is trying to create a healthier, more sustainable, more pleasurable planet. to live on. So now I'm traveling a lot. I'm headed to Australia next week, and then I'll be on the mainland and going to Europe this summer. So,
oh, wow. And the reason you're traveling is basically reaching out to other communities?
My main mode right now is teaching weekend workshops. I have a couple different types of workshops depending on the skill and experience level of people that are taking them. But all of them share in common my desire and my focus to really give people practical tools to improve their relationship and to integrate sexuality in that. I don't say that my workshops are not sex workshops, but, you know, if you have anything to do with sensuality or sexuality and you don't mention it right up front, you know, then people, you know, would feel like you're trying to hide something. So I'm really upfront about the fact that I definitely deal a lot with sexuality and sensuality, but it's definitely more than just the sex or sexual technique workshop.
You know, what I just think is terrible is that our culture keeps trying to separate sensuality and spirituality from sex. People, you know, it's like they want to have these conversations separately, and I think that's just so sad, personally.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I actually look at the, I draw a distinction between sexuality and sensuality, and I really encourage for people to drop into a deeper level of sensuality and see how we can get so much more pleasure from, you know, a non-sexual or non-genital experience. And so that's a lot of the work in the workshop is actually having experiences where people can drop into this really deep state of relaxation and connection, because so oftentimes people, you know, with, you're aware of, you know, all the fear, shame, and guilt that's tied in with sexuality, and then so often when people actually do connect, it's more of an emotional release than actually a connection, because we have so much stuff that's kind of been shoved into our sexuality that we tease that stuff apart.
Well, yes, and I think really the journey is about teasing it apart and then also figuring out how it all works together.
Absolutely.
My concept of sex is so broad, it's kind of hard to describe it, but I feel like breathing is sex.
And
I feel like genital sex is such a small part of that. It's just like such a small part of the whole picture.
No, it's definitely true. I appreciate what you're saying that, you know, and I've had this dialogue with other folks that I talk about, you know, well, is this touch or is this massage that we're doing, is this erotic?
Right.
It's such an interesting question, and so much of it just depends on how you're going to define, you know, those terms.
It really does, and I know people get frightened because they want to have healthy boundaries and safety, and I absolutely know that those things are very important, but it's just, you know, I look at it more as a continuum.
I talk a lot about ranges and helping people to expand their range of sensation so that you can have a lot more pleasure without going into pain, without disconnecting and checking out. And we'll also talk a lot about our emotional range so that, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they may be with a partner for 10 or 20 years and there's just something that's in the way of them connecting. And it's oftentimes it's not really a technique thing. It's much more just being able to feel safe to express their truth, whatever that truth is. And, you know, a lot of times people don't feel free to be really honest with their partners. And, you know, that's learning how to do that in a way that builds connection is one of the things I focus on the most.
Now, you actually teach something called the SET process, and it's about sensation, emotion, and thought.
Yeah. Well, so often if you're, you know, if you're doing counseling work or you're just even hanging out with your friends, you know, how often do you hear people say, yeah, I have a feeling that, or, you know, I'm feeling like you want to do this, or, you know, I'll really challenge people and say, okay, when you say the word feel, what are you describing? Are you describing a sensation? You know, like that touch is warm, or that touch is light, or my skin feels tingly? Or is it more of an emotion? You know, I feel sad, or I feel turned on and excited. And actually breaking that down helps people to navigate those states of high sensation, those states of high emotion. Because most of the time, you know, if I look at it, you know, if we were looking at a chart, we'd see people kind of bopping along their day-to-day life. And their sensations and their emotions are, you know, within a certain range. And then all of a sudden we start taking our clothes off and touching each other, and the sensation and the emotions are going off the chart. And if we don't have a capacity to expand our ability to respond to that, you know, we'll disconnect from ourselves and we'll disconnect from other people. So that's a big part of what we're doing in the workshops, is expanding that range in a way that's really safe and supportive.
Hmm. So I actually asked people on Facebook if they thought sensation, emotion, or thought, which of those three was more important or real to them. And there were actually some comments here. John said, they all feel real to me. And Clifford just turned it into sex. And Peter said emotions feel the most real because it's not just stuck in the brain like thought. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I mean, I have a friend who's a neuroscientist, and I actually know a couple people that are doing research in this, and it's just very, very interesting, you know, that we do have certain centers in the brain that are activated, you know, with different experiences, with different emotions. But, you know, it's not that cut and dried. It's not that simple, because it's very much relational. And emotions kind of mediate between the sensation and the thought. Because you can have a really strong sensation in your body, and then it reminds you of another time you had that sensation, and that'll bring up an emotion. You know, so it's just, to me, actually going slow enough to pay attention to that stuff, there's a lot of richness there. And there's an opportunity for a much deeper level of connection than just simply, you know, looking at it and going, well, you know, in terms of my sexuality, I just want to have really, really hot, enjoyable sex, you know, which is wonderful. And how do you get there? You know, and to me, a big part of how you get there is really having intimate knowledge of yourself and your body and your emotions, and being able to communicate it. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to communicate it verbally and speaking complete sentences while you're making love, but actually having more of a capacity to know your own emotions and communicate them, you know, I've found in my own life that that's made a big difference in my relationship.
You actually talk about that if you can distinguish sensation from emotion from thought, that you're no longer held prisoner by quote-unquote feelings. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, for me, I know that I have a lot more choice in terms of how I respond to different emotions. When I'm aware, when I've cultivated that witnessing part of myself, and this is, many people do this through meditation, through yoga, through different types of spiritual practices where we're really listening, and where we, you know, as human beings, we have this brain that not only is very intelligent and can figure out problems, we have this ability to watch ourselves. We have this ability to actually observe ourselves and our thought process and our emotions. And by cultivating that ability to witness ourselves, it gives us a lot more freedom in terms of how we want to respond. So, you know, say I'm in a monogamous relationship with someone, and, you know, that person tells me that they're having an attraction for someone else. that might generate some fear, it might generate some anger, might have some really strong emotions, but I can choose how I want to respond. I don't have to, I'm not, you know, an amoeba in a petri dish. I can actually choose that I want to respond in a way that's going to build connection. And so when we have this awareness, we can choose how we respond to different situations. And I think that makes a big difference in relationships. It may seem really simple, but it's key when we actually go into the three-step communication process that we investigate in the workshops and other work that I do.
Well, tell me a little bit about the workshops. What kind of things do you actually do?
We will usually do exercises in communication, in touch, emotional awareness. We have some exercises are solo exercises. Some are couple or dyad exercises, and some are group exercises. And, people often ask me whether it's a couple's workshop, if you have to be in a couple. I usually have a pretty good mixture of couples and individuals, and I let people know that really, if you're going as a couple and you're doing this kind of work to become more conscious in your relationships and improve your relationships, that you actually need to start with yourself and not focus so much on the other person and on that relationship, and actually building your self-knowledge and building your capacity for your emotions and your response as an individual. And as a group, one of the things I really encourage for people to do is to really broaden their circle of intimacy. And this, it's often scary for people because, especially if they're in a monogamous relationship, people may feel really threatened by having a greater degree of intimacy. But what we found is that when people actually feel safe to share their emotions and express their truth to a larger number of people, it takes a lot of pressure off that primary relationship if it is, you know, whether it's monogamous or not, or, you know, it's complicated, you know, there's polyamory, there's any number of different alternatives to more standard monogamous relationships.
So the resistance around monogamy to having friends outside the relationship, boy, it seems like of all the relationships that one could be in, the monogamous one would need to have those friendships outside the relationship more than any.
Absolutely. But, and it's really key in doing that, that we're conscious and about how we talk about our partner and how we talk about our relationship. Because, you know, how many people, you know, do you hear, they stay in relationships that aren't serving them, they're not really happy, they're not satisfied, and basically they just complain about their partner.
Right.
And that doesn't get anyone anywhere. So, you know, whenever I start hearing someone say something like that, I'll just say, oh, do you want me to give you a session? Do you want me to give you some attention so you can release your emotions? And, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, no, I don't need to have a session. I just, you know, I'm just really frustrated with my partner. Well, yeah, and do you want to release it or do you just want to, you know, bitch and complain? So when we actually do a conscious emotional release process, the intention is that we actually want to release it. Because if we're staying in a relationship, why would you want to stay with someone that you're just going to bitch and complain about?
Right.
You don't actually want to release it so you can be in a state of love and trust and connection with that person. So that's a big piece of what we're doing in the workshop is providing an opportunity for people to really consciously release their emotions. And you can do it in a way where you're not just complaining about someone. You can say, I love this person. I want to build connection and trust with them. And I'm going to say this stuff with the intention of actually releasing it and not just, you know, getting you to agree with me that this person's, you know, acting in a way that's out of integrity or unconscionable or selfish or whatever the judgments we have about other people are. And
okay.
We typically have the most upsets and charges with our own partners. And it's a really advanced practice to give empathy to our partner when that partner thinks that we're the reason to blame for their distress. That's a really advanced practice that I don't recommend people try until they've actually cultivated some of these easier skills.
Hmm. Interesting. What did you teach when you were over at One Taste?
Well, I was living there in the community, and it's interesting you'd say that because I've evolved what I'm doing, and I have a lot of gratitude for what they're doing.
Was this New York or San Francisco?
This is San Francisco. It was there when we were getting it started. And I haven't checked in with them in a couple of years, but I have a lot of appreciation for the work that they're doing. I don't know really where their work is at right now. I know at the time I was very focused on yoga and a more holistic approach to incorporating sexuality in a larger community. And that's what really drew me to One Taste, was the focus on community and this amazing opportunity to live with a large group of people with very close physical proximity. I mean, at the time we were all, there's 40 of us living in a warehouse together.
Oh, I know. I've been there.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty cramped.
So if you have any material that you're trying to hide from yourself, you can't live in a situation like
no.
that.
No. No, well, everybody was so confrontive there, too. Even if you were just in the lobby, you were going to get confronted.
Yeah.
Call on your stuff.
And what I've tried to do is to take a lot of that knowledge and a lot of those experiences I had there, but to create a little bit more safety and a little bit more of a container around it so that people can really believe when they're getting those reflections that they're coming out of love and they're coming out of a desire for connection. Because I think sometimes when people get charged up, we can start giving our judgments to people, and they can't really take it in because we're just in defensive mode. So I think it's really important, and that's one of the things we do in the workshop is we'll do a process called revelation where the preface to giving a revelation to someone is that I'm telling you this because I care for you, and I'm going to tell you something that may be hard for you to hear, but I'm saying this because I want to actually build connection with you, not just because I want to dump it. And that's a big difference.
But, yeah, one's intention is so important. So important.
And
so,
someone to believe it.
So, just I missed a beat here, though, because you were getting ready to tell me that you were grateful for your time at One Taste, and it sounded like there was a but in there. What was that about?
There's a but in there. I really have a lot of appreciation for Nicole and what they've created there. And I think it is very confrontational. And it's interesting because I think certain people, due to their default patterns, that's another one of the terms I like to use a lot, some people are really drawn towards confrontational situations. And what's interesting to me psychologically is that so oftentimes we have a predisposition, we have a default pattern, we have a way of thinking and being, and we actually create situations around us to back up that story, as opposed to doing things that actually challenge that story. And you can be in a really, really confrontational place, and in a way, if you have a predisposition to being in those relationships and situations, you're not necessarily actually expanding your range and getting at the heart of the matter, which for many people I think is having a safe place to really speak their truth and to do so in a really loving way. And I think that's where I did part company, is that I couldn't really trust the reflection. We're really always coming from a place of love.
Yeah, you know, I understand exactly what you're talking about. It felt harsh and cold at times.
I say that
in the context that I used to call One Taste my home away from home, and I always, always felt so loved and accepted when I went there. I really did. But some of the groups, you know, where people were being confronted about their stuff, just really felt abrupt and unnecessarily so.
I guess that's what I'm getting at, yeah. It's like, I think that there's a place for that, and at the same time, I really ask that people check in with people. So if I'm going to give a revelation to someone, I'll say, oh, are you available to receive this from me? You know, and I think they actually do practice, some of this there. And at the same time, I really shouldn't say, because I haven't been there for a couple of years, so I don't really know what the on-the-ground reality of One Taste is. I know that it's a very powerful place, and there's nothing else like it, and I'm super grateful for my time there.
As am I.
having said that, I think that one of the things I'm really interested in is activating the parasympathetic nervous system and moving our sexuality out.
Okay, now wait a second. There's some listeners who might not know what a parasympathetic nervous system is, so can you clue them in?
Yeah, so in real basic terms, when we're in the fight or flight mechanism in our body, when we get scared and our heart starts to race, and for all the world you think we're like, running in the jungle away from a saber-toothed tiger or something, when in reality our partner has just done something that, scared us or upset us.
Right.
We will get activated and be really reactive with the fight or the flight. And I think actually moving our sexuality out of that type of reactivity is quite key. And it's not just the key to having good sex, because a lot of times people will say, oh, we have the best makeup sex. We have these terrible knockdown, drag-out fights, and then we have really, really good sex. And then, of course, the next day they're fighting again. And I just look at that and I kind of go, okay, no judgment, but is that actually giving you what you want in life, or are you using your sex then for an emotional release valve? And when we're more in the parasympathetic system, we're in a deeper state of relaxation and receptivity, and I think we're in a greater state of sensitivity to ourselves and to our partners. And frankly, that's where I think a lot of people would benefit by being more in that place. And to do that, we have to move out of shame. Because so many people are having sex with still a lot of shame, fear, and guilt around it, and they're not actually really seeing and connecting with their partner.
Well, right on.
Does that
resonate? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just said, does that resonate?
Oh, of course. This is the shame-free zone. So anything about getting rid of shame or reducing shame is going to resonate with me. I think it's one of our more debilitating emotions. And a lot of times stirred up artificially by cultural artifacts. So, I find that very disturbing. It's not like somebody who isn't exposed to the culture of shame happens to manufacture that organically. You usually have to have a group of people kind of introduce that concept to you. But I make a distinction between guilt and shame. By the way, I think there
Absolutely.
Is a difference. My good friend Charlie Glickman does not so much, and we still like each other. No.
it's so funny we just said this, because I'm just reminded one night we were at One Taste, and Nicole announced that the game for the night was the shame and blame game, and we were all going around a circle, and each person took their turn to shame and blame someone else in the circle with real stuff. And it's really interesting because, it's like we practiced a lot of these things that, you just can't even imagine people doing this. But it was really powerful, and people were actually doing real, they were bringing up real material for themselves. And, and in a sense, it's amazing because you can expand your ability to handle that. And then when it actually happens to you, you have more of an ability to respond. And at the same time, it's like, that's pretty confronting. That's pretty harsh. That's a pretty harsh game to play in front of a couple dozen people.
Well, I saw some of that really backfire on people who had trauma issues, and I thought that was irresponsible, frankly.
Yeah, when I look at the more I've been doing work with what I call sexual healing and empowerment work, because I don't think you can have healing without empowerment, the more I'm aware that a lot of people, not just those that identify as victims of abuse or rape or incest or whatever, so many people have patterns of disconnection and disassociation around sexuality. And that a lot of times people that are coming from pretty traumatic backgrounds, they're predisposed because of that to find themselves in what I would consider to be abusive relationships, or at least relationships where they're not so much in their parasympathetic nervous system, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, you actually have something called the conscious release process. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. So I developed this process with some input from my experience at One Taste, from input from reevaluation counseling, which has been around for, gosh, I think probably 50 years now. It's a form of peer counseling. And from another friend of mine who has something called holistic peer support, and just basically a whole lot of different modes of co-counseling or peer counseling. And the basic idea is that rather than just going to see a psychologist, rather than just going to see a counselor, which can be extremely valuable, that a key part of the healing work comes from when we're actually able to give and receive a session, and we have some more awareness about the process that we're going through when we're releasing our emotions. So we do a process called I call it the conscious verbal emotional release process. And it's pretty simple. It's basically just asking people to say whatever is preventing them from being in the present moment. And
okay.
We do it in such a way so that I really encourage for people to take 100% responsibility for themselves and to reference their sensation, emotion, and thought, and just to speak, in one complete sentence at a time. Because what typically happens is if people start talking about something that's upsetting them, pretty soon their eyes are going to glaze over, they're going to look elsewhere, and they're just lost in their story. And it's not actually releasing it. So what we found is that by getting people to practice speaking in one complete sentence with reference to sensation, emotion, and thought, that it actually releases those emotions more readily, and that at the end of those sessions, people do feel lighter and they feel more in the present moment.
Well, this is where so much takes place, really, when people are taking responsibility for their feelings and processing those instead of laying it at the feet of your lover and expecting them to, fix you. So many times I have found in relationship that once I've expressed myself, processed my stuff, I'm okay. I'm able to move on. It's not like I have to have somebody else co-sign that, or
you don't need
your validation. But the witness is really important, don't you think? It's kind of reminds me of 12-step meetings. The people in there are not allowed to cross-talk, which means they can't give any advice, and mostly they're not going to say a thing. But the fact that they're there listening, witnessing,
yeah,
you go through your process, is very powerful.
It is really powerful, and it's a key distinction. We do another process in the workshop called the witnessing circle. And we do it in such a way so that I really get people to tune in to whether they're resonant with what someone has shared, whether it seems like they're speaking for them, and to also just be aware when someone shares something that really hasn't been your experience, but that you can still witness, still give empathy. And in the end, it's not so much whether we've had the same experience. Are we actually able to be present and witness and give empathy? That helps people to move on.
It seems like the most common human condition is one of feeling uniquely isolated. and that the strongest urge we seem to have is to just find out, does anybody else feel this way?
Yeah, we want to know.
And that can relieve so much right there, just knowing that somebody else gets it and that you're not alone.
I think for me, and so many people, whether someone's coming to see me because of, would consider a sexual dysfunction or something like that, what I really found with most people is that, yes, there are physiological impediments and reasons and difficulties people have, but so often the issues really are in the emotional body, and just getting people to a place where they're conversant with what actually their emotions are, what are they actually experiencing emotionally, and that is oftentimes really challenging. And I remember, back 10, 20 years ago, as a male in this society, I felt like my emotional range was pretty much limited to anger.
Well, that's the emotion that men are allowed to have. The one, it's right up there with you can wear green, brown, and dark blue colors, and then you're allowed to be angry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was amazing to me when I got into nonviolent communication and looking at anger management and stuff. It's like, oh my God, there's this huge palette of emotions that I can choose from here. There's actually a lot of shades and subtleties here that when I've moved out of the place where I either feel dead or I feel angry, and occasionally, if I'm lucky, I might feel turned on and sexy. There's a huge range of emotions that are out there. And that's really what gives the richness to life, and that's a big part of what we're doing with the conscious sensuality.
Hmm. That's part of the witnessing circle, then.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. And I want to say a little thing about touch too, if you want to go into that.
Oh yeah, definitely. We'll talk about touch here in the shame-free zone. Go for it.
So after we've done the those processes. It's really important for me to actually have an experience of conscious touch where people are practicing saying yes, people are practicing saying no, and that we do an exercise where we practice what I call the four aspects of touch, which are location, speed, pressure, and the mode or the motion.
Uh-huh.
So whether you're just shaking hands with someone, or whether you're having intercourse with someone, you can actually describe the type of touch that's going on, the type of touch that you want to receive, and describe the type of touch that you're giving to someone. And to do that with as much consciousness as possible and actually really respecting people and checking in, and not just assuming because you've had a 10-year marriage with someone that gives you license touch someone the way you want, and how they want you to touch them is going to change all the time. So actually developing your capacity, that was one of the things at One Taste that I thought was most important, is getting men to learn how to just say thank you. Be really humble, and just, if a woman says, oh, I'd really like for you to touch me in a slightly different way, for the man to say, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing what you want. I so much just want to give to you how you want to receive.
And, in some ways, some of that comes from One Taste, the whole idea of men thanking women. But what about women thanking men?
Oh, well, both. It goes both ways. I mean, that was, I think it was slightly unbalanced because the focus at One Taste is women's orgasm.
Yes. Oming.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, I think for a lot of people, they get a lot out of that practice, and there's a lot more to life, and there's a lot more to sex than just using one approach. That becomes too ideological, in my opinion. And actually just really tuning in and getting to a really deep level of listening. And not all of it has to be verbal. I mean, I think people might have this idea that, oh my God, sex is going to be so boring if I have to check in every 2 seconds and say, is this okay, honey? Is this okay? Is this all right? It's like, no. But when you build that trust and you actually do have that level of communication, so you know, if I'm making love with a woman and I get the slightest sense that she's in pain or discomfort, there's no way I can continue having sex without checking in, you know?
Right.
And so many times women have stuffed their voice because they just think, oh, it just comes with the territory.
So sad. You talk about conscious touching, it really being embodied, and I think, you know, one of my frustrations as a sex educator is just trying to get people off of the track of looking at their bodies as if they're machines. It seems almost impossible at times. And I will literally come out and say, you're not a machine. So we're not going to, like, come up with a, you know, just, you know, flick this, turn that, rub that 3 times, and voila.
Yeah.
You know, you are this integrated, holistic entity that requires so much engagement on so many levels.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's, I think sometimes people are, you know, they're approaching sex in kind of a mechanical way. Or, on the other hand, people can have an approach where they're very focused on their spirituality, and in Tantra I've seen where people who actually still have a fair amount of shame and discomfort around sex will be very focused on what people would call spirituality or energetics, but they'll actually still disconnect from their body. And they won't actually see what's going on at a sensation level. They're very focused oftentimes on, you know, having this amazing spiritual experience and not actually paying attention to what's actually going on in their body.
Right. Yeah. Well, just about anything can be used as a kind of an addictive pattern or a distraction.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's definitely true. And I think that's when I look at sex and intimacy, it's really important for me that I support people in not using sexuality as a substitute for intimacy. And I think so often that's what's happening, and that's why people are actually not feeling very satisfied.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You know, and we're talking about being embodied and how important it is to stay in the moment, and I see here you've got something called the present time game. Mm-hmm. Sounds like an appropriate time to introduce that concept.
Yeah, it's basically just a game we play in a circle where we, you know, people will speak their different sensations, emotions, and thoughts with, you know, varying degrees of challenge in terms of what's going on. You know, some might say like, "Oh, well, tell me the first thing you notice about the person on your left," and you know, that person might say, "Oh, they've got glasses, they've got brown hair," you know. But if you really take the game seriously, someone might say, "God, I'm so embarrassed to say it, but like, I just really noticed you have really beautiful breath." You know?
Mm-hmm.
And how often would someone say that in a group of people? You know? Not very often. You know? But what is the first thing? And actually practicing that level of spontaneity and authenticity, that's a big piece of what builds trust and connection and creates more intimacy, because we can really trust that people are going to speak their truth no matter what it is.
You should know. No, go ahead.
No.
Oh, I was just going to tell, I'm checking in with the folks here on Facebook again, and Hazel joined your Facebook group while we were speaking. And Brian actually says that emotion means the most to him. Thought controls him, and sensation feeds him, and they kind of need to be in balance for it to be right, and he's still working on that. Do you have any tips for him?
Still working on being more connected in with his emotional body.
Ah, emotional body.
I look at it as the emotional body. And I think that you know, having a group of people that you cultivate trust with is one of the most powerful ways to do it. Certainly having one relationship where you can really dive deeply. But, you know, a lot of people out there, they're not in a long-term partnership, and they really want to be. But, you know, you can still meet so many of your needs through a larger, you know, through other people that you don't necessarily have to be having a sexual relationship with, that you might be able to share some intimacy with. You might be able to share some touch and some sensuality and still respect people's boundaries. My friend Reed Mahalko does these cuddle parties. I don't know if you had Reed on as a guest.
Reed's a friend of mine, and he's been on the show, too. Friend of mine and a friend of the show, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, expanding that, you know, having different ways that we can connect with different people, because I think with so many people in our society, you know, we've been taught that you can't ever really touch anybody. Maybe there's a handshake, or maybe in certain subcultures we tend to hug more. I know in my culture here in Hawaii, people hug a lot, but there's so much fear around, sexual harassment.
Oh, I know.
Drop in and be able to give like an actual loving hug where you're present and you breathe together for a moment. I mean, for a lot of people, they've never really experienced that.
We're so touch deprived. Touch deprived. And it had such a profound impact, not just on our emotional well-being, but also our health and our longevity.
Yeah. And that's why in our workshops, we actually practice things like hugging. We practice how to give touch where we're really connected and we're available and we're sensitive and we're open. And it's not necessarily sexual. It may, you know, somebody might feel aroused and they might feel some erotic energy moving, and that's totally fine for them to feel it. And it's not... The touch is not given just with the purpose of stimulation. It's the purpose is to create more
connection.
And relaxation. Yeah, so we can just be comfortable, you know, having more touch happen in our lives. And that way, then when we do connect sexually, it's not just this orgasm, ejaculation, emotional release experience. My sex life is very different now at this age than it was, 20 years ago, where I think I was oftentimes, not that I wasn't loving, not that I didn't enjoy it or my partners didn't enjoy it, but I think I was much more using sexuality for emotional relief than to build connection.
Mm. Well, and hopefully, I think in its, at its best, sex should be a spiritual journey and one that takes us through a lot of different incarnations so that we don't get stuck. It's interesting to me how many people will think, well, this is who I am and this is how I have sex. And I think, well, that's kind of sad because if it were a journey, then you'd, be less likely to get bored, for one. And two, it would be a much more integrated part of your life. Something that really...
Yeah, I'm just thinking about men... right now, I don't know why, I'm wondering if this resonates with you. I'm just thinking about men who, how many men have had the experience of making love and just going into a really quiet place, and then at a certain point, you don't have an erection anymore, and then you're done, and it's fine. And you haven't ejaculated, you haven't had an orgasm, you've just had this sexual experience, and you're actually repatterning your emotional body and really focusing on the connection. I think too often people get in a very into a mindset where we're studying these books, we're doing our certain breathing, we're squeezing our PC muscles, we're building our energy, and just go into a deep state of relaxation and make love, and then at a certain point, just breathe together and don't do anything. Just relax. Just be really easy on yourself. It's like, you can just see all these couples getting into all these fights about how you were supposed to do this and you were supposed to do that and we're supposed to be having this amazing tantric, sexual, spiritual experience. And there's a lot of attachment there, as opposed to just going, wow, what do we actually want to do right now? Like that deep listening, like what's my body actually wanting to do right now? And in many cases, I think it's going into a deeper state of relaxation. And that's what's actually going to feed people more than going for the most powerful, non-ejaculatory, orgasmic, tantric, kundalini explosion.
Although those aren't bad either. But
they're wonderful.
I understand what you're saying. It's task-oriented and it's goal-oriented. And by virtue of inhabiting that kind of energetic space, you've already eliminated your ability to invite the things you want into your circle anyway. And if orgasm is the quote-unquote goal, you know, I try to remind people that you can't chase an orgasm. No. You can't make one happen. You can't chase it. Yeah, it's all about letting go. And the only way you can let go is if you don't have an agenda. If you are convinced that you are going to make this thing happen, good luck to you.
One of the things I actually, you know, for couples out there that have children, and because of sheer, you know, the shame, fear, and guilt and the lives that they're leading, you know, oftentimes by the time they put the kids to bed, people are so exhausted, and then they feel like, oh, for the marriage, for the sake of the kids, for everything, we need to have sex, and we need to have good sex, and, you know, people oftentimes are exhausted by the time that they actually do connect, and they have the time and the space to do that. So one of the things I suggest for people is go to bed at the same time that you put your kids to bed. If you put your kids to bed at 8 o'clock or 8:30, go to bed at the same time. And then you can wake up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning, and you got a good 2 hours to play with each other when you're actually rested and relaxed.
Ah, I love that.
And I just am amazed at how few people would do that. And I just go, why are you watching the stupid television show or watching pornography on the internet or reading a romance novel or doing something? It's like, go to bed. You know, that's a weird, it's kind of a weird sex advice, but just go to bed and get a good night's sleep.
I think that's awesome. I really do. I think you're right on there. It's the priorities people have are so messed up. And you know what? This hour flew by, and we got to sign off now. So tell the listeners how they can find you. I've already posted your website up on Facebook, but I'm sure you work over the phone, so how can they get a hold of you?
You can just go through my website, ConsciousSensuality.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Conscious Sensuality Group, or you can actually go to my Facebook page, Robert Silber. And that's spelled, by the way,
S-I-L-B as in boy, E-R.
That's right, S-I-L-B-E-R. And I will be... I'll be teaching some workshops on the mainland, and I'm going to Australia next week, and then I'll be in Europe later in the summer, but I'm lining up some workshops in different parts of the United States this spring and the summer. So if you'd like to connect with me and find out if I'm coming to your town, or you'd like to get me to come to your town, I'd love to hear from you.
All right.
And, yeah, I do Skype calls, counseling calls, and sexual healing and empowerment work with people. I do that on the phone and by Skype.
Thanks, Robert. You've been great. I really appreciate you joining me in the shame-free zone. And thanks to all my listeners for tuning in. I am actually not going to be here next Monday, so I will make sure that you have a program here to listen to, but it'll probably be a repeat of one of my favorites, and I hope you'll tune in anyway. If you happen to live in Northern California, San Jose, Santa Rosa, Santa Cruz, it's time for you to get on my calendar because I am coming to the area and I'm going to be doing house calls. You can text me at 415-407-2932. That's 415-407-2932. Thanks and good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?